Okay, good morning, everybody. Continuing on dealing with issues on Shabbos and move on to other things that are related. So last week we discussed washing dishes. Now, after the dishes are washed, they need to be dried. So we've discussed drying dishes. Drying dishes has a problem that it makes the towel wet. What's the problem of making a towel wet? Is the issa of melabin. Melabin is the melacha of making something white, or otherwise known as making something clean. And the way material is washed is first you make it wet, then you scrub it, and then you wring it, squeeze it out. And each of those steps of the process is an issur of melabin, of chavis, of chavis. Therefore, we say that to make something wet on Shabbos is already the first stage of melabin. So to pour water over a dirty garment would essentially start the washing process. What about pouring water over a clean garment? So that is a machlokes, and we try to be machmir not to pour water over a clean garment, but if there are times where one can be maker, but generally speaking, we don't pour water over a clean garment. However, to pour dirty water over a garment, whether the garment's clean or dirty, is not a problem of melabin. And therefore, generally speaking, drying, drying hands in particular, is usually referred to as derech dichlu, that the way the water is transferred into the material is in a way that adds dirt, but is not in a way of cleanse, and therefore it is permitted to do such a thing. So to dry your hands on a towel, we consider that ends up making the towel dirtier than it was beforehand, and therefore that's not considered as clean. But generally speaking, when it comes to allowing water to go into a towel when you do drying, we'll say that it's there flicker. Maximum, if the water is very clean and the towel is clean, so you're putting water into a clean towel, so then you've also got a sheet that holds that putting water into a clean garment is also not considered as washing because the garment is clean already. Therefore, when it comes to the point of the water being absorbed in the towel, that we're not worried about because, as I said, either it's considered as derech dichlu, meaning either it is that the way the liquid enters the material is through a process of actually making it dirty and not cleansing it. Or you say that it's clean water going, it's clean water, but it's going into a material that's clean, and clean water is clean material that is clean already. Therefore, we're not worried about the water going into the material. There are opinions that are more matmir, it's not the way of the Paskin. Yet, the problem of drying is what happens when the towel gets wet. And remember, fluffy cotton towels are not an ancient staple that was amongst the human race. They are much more, it's a much more modern invention to have such towels that have an enormous capacity to absorb water. Imagine taking what would be a tablecloth or a curtain or a sheet or something like that and using that as a towel. That seems to be what they used in the olden days. And that, you know, it does not have much capacity to absorb water, and within a short amount of time it's going to be quite wet. And therefore, what Chazal were worried about was that if a person is going to dry something on such a towel, the towel is going to become soaked, and the next thing the person does is wring it, you squeeze it out, so that it can be used again. And therefore, the question is, can we use a towel on Shabbos, or are we worried that once it becomes very wet, it's going to be wrung out? And there are cases where Chazal are machmir on this. However, we do take into account that nowadays in age, we don't do that with our towels. We live in a fairly affluent society where we have more than one towel in the house. And if our towel gets wet, we throw it into the hamper and we take out a fresh one. And therefore, it is not the norm, it is not the standard behavior for people in the 21st century to squeeze out a towel and reuse it, but rather take out a fresh towel. Based on that, we say that it is no problem from this point of view of a chashash that you might come to squeeze, that therefore you may use a towel to dry things on Shabbos. So you may dry dishes. The problem with drying dishes is only one place that will be a problem, and that is when you're dealing with a dish that has a narrow opening. And as a result, the towel needs to be squeezed into a tight space, and that could cause wringing of the towel and could cause squeezing of the water, which would be also on Shabbos. And therefore, the standard understanding is that you can dry your flat plates, bowls. When it comes to cups, then one has to be careful. If the cup is narrow enough that the towel has to squeeze into it, then that would be awesome to dry it. I believe that it also depends on the way a person does it. Someone who takes a towel and stuffs it into his cup and turns it around to dry, it would be awesome. If you had a very thin material towel and you have thin fingers and you carefully put the towel into the cup and use your fingers to dry out the sides of the cup, and you know there's no squeezing taking place. So I don't think we're dealing here with what we call a no clue. You know, this is a tzeirah, you know, not a dry cups. I think the way to see it is a person can use his tzeirah to know, am I putting it into a tight place where the towel has to be squeezed, or am I doing it gently like I would do a plate, and therefore it's not a problem. And therefore, ask me how tight must the cup be before it becomes also, and how thick must the towel be, and how big your fingers. I think a person can judge it for himself at which point it's considered that way or not. And depending on the method used in order to dry that particular dish. The point is that the towel should not be squeezed when using it to dry. If a towel does get wet and we're going to discard it and take out a fresh one, we have to know that when we discard the wet towel, we have to also observe various halachas, and that is the towel may not be hung up to dry in a normal place that is used for hanging up to dry, meaning you can't go putting it over the washing line, because we don't hang anything of Shabbos on the washing line. Maris Ayin, the person thinks that we might have done laundry, therefore putting something onto the washing line, whether it be a jacket that got wet in the rain, or whether it's an undershirt that was filled with perspiration after a long walk, or whether it be a towel that you dried multiple dishes and now it's wet. None of these things, for whatever reason it got wet, none of these things may be hung on the washing line. But you may hang it up to dry, either you put it back on its hook of where it normally hangs, because that's, no one believes that you hang your towel up on a regular hook to dry. You hang your towel up on a hook for people to use. So even though it happens to be you have a towel rod that is made in a way that it will air out nicely and dry nicely, but since you're putting it back in its place, and not in the place that is designated for hanging to dry, so then it will be permissible on Shabbos, because remember the whole idea here is a Maris Ayin, and therefore you have to just see, is this considered the normal way of hanging it to dry, or is this considered the normal way of hanging it, because this is where you keep it. So too, if you would hang it over the back of a chair, that's not considered as hanging it out to dry, it would also be permissible. The other thing to take into account when you're dealing with wet garments is not to put them in near a source of heat so that the moisture contained in the garment might get to Yad Zeledesboy, and it would be a problem with Rishul. So in places where you have a radiator in the bathroom that is made like a towel rack so that the towels can warm up and dry out between one shower and the next. So if there's a possibility that the towel rack is warm enough that it will warm the towel, then the liquid inside will reach out to lettuce boy, and one may not hang a damp towel over such a rack of chunks. When drying cutlery, one should be careful not to separate the different types, the knives, the forks, from the spoons, etc., because of boiling. Where even when you are preparing them for washing, you want to wash all the knives. You have to be careful not to separate the knives from the forks, so that you cannot have two towels to go wash the knives and leave the forks. Or when you wash them all, you now want to dry all the knives in one shot and all the forks in one shot. All this is also on Shabbos unless it is for immediate use. And however, if you're holding a bunch of cutlery and you're drying a piece by piece, so each piece that you put down, you can put down in its place. So true, if you have a cutlery drawer with dividers, so you dry a fork and put it with the forks, you dry a knife, put it with the knife, you dry another fork and put it with the forks, and by the time you finish drying all your cutlery, everything is neat and nice in the drawer, so that, for this purpose, is not considered koira, because you took it one by one, and you didn't separate it in order to make piles, because you were holding one. Now when you're holding one, you put it back in its place that is permissible. Polishing metal, whether it's brass, copper, silver, or anything like that, we're going to say is possible on Shabbos, especially if it's, you're using the chemicals that are made for such a thing, or special cloth that is made for polishing metal. One may not use it in Shabbos, one may not bring it to a shrine. However, this applies to metal, does not apply to glass. If you have a glass that needs a good rub down for it to become shiny, to get rid of all the fingerprints, and the water stains, etc., one may rub it down. Essentially, the problem of polishing on Shabbos is a issue of scratching it down, of machik, and you're removing a very small layer of the metal when you're polishing it, and therefore we're going to say that polishing is also, whereas in glass, nothing gets removed. There is an opinion to not to use barley when you scratch down your glass, and even that, and the question whether we pass the net, and why those acid, why the acid glass doesn't lose any material when during the process. Therefore, basically, especially if you're going to be using your regular cloth, we're going to say that buffing up and shining a glass utensil with a cloth would be mutter on Shabbos. Another thing that's also is sharpening knives, also that's whether to remove the rust or whether to sharpen it, that would be also on Shabbos. However, there is a mitzvah to sharpen the knife on Erev Shabbos. The mitzvah that I think is quite impractical in our day and age. We have stainless steel knives which last for a long time, and if they do get blunt, we don't bother sharpening them, we go buy a new one. But in the older days, it was very common that knives need to be sharpened on a regular basis. And one of the mitzvahs that are brought in Erev Shabbos is to sharpen knives. It's from the idea that the house should be ready for Shabbos, that anything that we need to use or need to do is prepared in advance. One of the things is to have good sharp knives. If the knives are blunt, then it's not a pleasure to use them. Therefore, to avoid what might cause conflict, might cause someone to get upset. And therefore, we try to think in advance of what we can do on Friday to avoid these situations on Shabbos. So one of the examples brought down halacha is to sharpen the knives before Shabbos. If a knife was bent out of shape, or the tines of a fork were bent out of line, one may not straighten them on Shabbos. If you have dishes that are made of parts, so it all depends on what the common usage is. Let's take a thermos for an example. The thermos has a lid that screws into the top. That's absolutely no problem to open and close. But it also has a cup that screws onto the top of the thermos mask. So can you unscrew that cup and use it? The answer is yes, because that's the normal way to put it on and take it off on a regular basis, and therefore not just if you're making or breaking, it's just this is the place that it's stored and it's not attached in a permanent manner, therefore you can take the cup off. However, a thermos glass also can be totally unscrewed. You can unscrew the base and take up the glass inside and now put it into bits and pieces, so you want to wash it very thoroughly, and you want to get to the inside, or water got inside, and you want to drain it, or something like that. That may not be done on Shabbos, because this is the normal way for a cleat to be held together by screwing the normal pieces. And when you unscrew the pieces that hold the thermos together, that is considered as destruction of a cleat, and not that this is the normal usage. Again, something which is done on a regular basis, on off, so that's not considered that you're destroying a building. No. That is the normal way to use it, is take that this section off and put this section back on again. Something where it's not the regular that you take it off. Yeah, once in a while, maybe it's done. But it's not the regular, therefore, taking it apart would be considered as destruction, putting it back together would be considered as a tikkun. Another thing that's also on Shabbos to do with your kalim is to kasher them. If you have kalim that for whatever reason need to be kashered, either it became trade, or chomet stick, something like that, and you want to kasher it. So kashering on Shabbos is also, because it is considered also like a tikkun kli, even though we don't see a physical difference between a kli before it was kashered and afterwards, but before it was also to use with this trade. And now it's mutter to use. Therefore, you've changed its usage from a non-available to available. That's considered if you have fixed the kli. And therefore, it's considered as zerim shum tikkun pano, tikkun kli, that you may not have fixed on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, there could be ways to get around something that became treif on Yom Tov, and you fulfill all the conditions that are needed to catch something within 24 hours. So then, if you have water, hot water anyway, because you can't cook up water in water for kashrin, but if you have hot water anyway for kashrin, and it's something that happened on Yom Tov, there is a place to be mako. I would say that if such a case comes up, go speak to your local Orthodox rabbi for precise instructions, because there are a lot of conditions that need to be fulfilled. Another example of something which, based on its religious status, it looks like one is fixing or breaking a kli, is tefillah keilim. If you have a utensil that was owned by a goy and now owned by a Jew, so we know that you have to be tovel such kli in a mikveh before using it. If it was used with the eved, the food does not become asur, but one may not use such kli before it has been tovel. And therefore, again, you are changing a kli from the status of asur, of not allowed to be used, to being allowed to be used. That again is what we call, it is similar to fixing the kli, and therefore may not be done on Shabbos. In cases of extreme need, again, one should consult with a rav, because there are ways to get around this in case of need. The more discusses, for example, if a person takes a cup that needs tefillah, and he goes to a mikveh and he draws a cup of water to drink. So while he draws a cup of water to drink, he makes sure the cup is totally submerged. So then he has put the cup in the mikveh, and the mikveh the cup becomes in toivels. That would be one way to do it. It's what we call a haroma. It's a deceptive way of doing it. As long as it's not nicker, as long as it's not clear to a bystander that that's your intention to toivel, because the intention looks like you need something to drink. So that would be a possibility of the milk getting past it. Another way would be is that something that belongs to a goy does not need tefillah. For example, if the person goes to a hotel and you have a dish that at least doesn't have a shiner from east of the head, so that means it's not a tray or something like that. But the problem is rather it hasn't been toivel. So long as it belongs to the goy, it doesn't need tefillah. It's only when the goy sells it to the Jew that it needs to have tefillah that before we use it. So one way to do it would be, if you're stuck and you need to use a utensil on Shabbos, is you give it to a goy as a gift, and you just hold it as a deposit in your home, and then you can use it, because once it belongs to a goy, it doesn't need tefillah. And also, not to be done without asking a shayla for discussion as to what happens if you do this on a long-term basis. Is it still considered belong to the goy? There's a lot of halakhic discussion, and therefore, if need be, again, consult a authoritative authority who can give guidance on such a case. But you should know there are, in other words, the rule is we don't toivel. If you're stuck, go ask a shayla, because there can be exceptions. Which also comes up if someone sells their chametz. So today we're quite makbid that when we sell chametz, we do not sell our utensils. We only sell chametz that might be caught in the utensils, but not the utensils themselves. Because once you sell it to a goy, even if he doesn't come and take it into his own home, but he did take ownership of it, that is the whole purpose of our mechira. Whatever we sell to the goy, he actually owns. We make sure to make all the kiyamim. So if he owns our chametz, so we're not over on his chametz to Pesach, then he owns our kelim as well. So when we get them back on Moed to Pesach, we have a problem that we've now received our kelim from a goy, and they need tefillah. Therefore, it has become common practice to the makbid that in the shtar mechiras chametz, when they sell the chametz to a goy, they do not sell the kelim, they only sell the possibility of chametz being caught in the kelim of the kelim themselves. Now, tablecloths. One may take a tablecloth that has crumbs on it and go shake it out, take it to the window and shake it out. That essentially is not a problem. One of the potential problems are, number one, it could be a problem of hoitzah mirushus lirushus, carrying. That means that you may not take something out from the private domain and instead put it into a public domain. So therefore, shaking out a tablecloth with crumbs, even though the crumbs are small, nevertheless, this is only permissible if there is an eruv. Therefore, you're shaking out your comes from your window, which is taking them out from a private domain into further part of a private domain. But if you put it into a place where there's no Eruv, that's problematic and troublesome, may not be such a thing. And the second issue that's discussed when shaking out crumbs is the halacha of zoire. What is zoire? Zoire is winnowing. Winnowing is when you take a mixture of grain and the chaff and you throw it into the air, and the lighter chaff gets blown away by the wind, and the heavier grain does not move and land in the same place it was thrown up from. That way you're separating the lighter chaff from the heavier grain with the aid of the wind. And the Lama Possum say that any time you do something to move something with the aid of the wind will be a problem of zoire. There's a discussion if a person spits outside and the wind is then going to carry the spit further, or if a person washes his hands in the wind is going to bring the drops of water to a further place, is that considered as moving something with the aid of the wind? There is such a discussion, and the possible help that's not zoire, because zoire is when you use the wind to separate, which you don't know is going to something will move with the aid of the wind and something won't, or something will go further, something's closer, so you end up with two piles, but if it's just moving something which is going anyway, and just moves a little further, the person throws, he shakes his hands off excess water into the wind, the water's flying anyway, the wind taking a little bit further, that's not a problem also. Therefore, the accepted practice is when you take your tablecloth which has crumbs in it and you shake it out and you're repressing it, it has to be a windy day and the crumbs are now going to fly a little bit further, that is not a problem of zoire, and therefore you can shake out your tablecloth with crumbs on Shabbos. Now what happens if there is mukta on the tablecloth? For example, what can be mukta is anything which is no longer edible, not to humans and not to animals. So if you have, for example, shells, peels, bones, or that type of thing, whether it be an eggshell, whether it be a grapefruit peel, or shells of a nut, or bones, we'll discuss bones, there's different types of bones, but those are all things that we don't eat, and therefore we consider them as mukta once we have removed the edible part from them. So we say that if you have such things on your table, then you have to be aware of hevus mukta. And the way to remove it is what we call tiltu min hatzad. Tiltu min hatzad is when you use a intermediary to do the moving. You don't carry it with your hands, but rather it is on a plate and you carry the plate out, or you use a utensil to push the mukta off the table onto something else or into the garbage or something like that. What seems to be common in the days of Chazal was that the tabletop was not connected to the legs. The table was relatively small. Everybody had their own table. So you just picked up the tabletop, you carried it to the garbage, and then you knocked off all the unwanted leftovers and remains and mukta items that were on the tabletop into the garbage. So you did everything, the tilt of the natsad, as carrying it with something else rather than with one's hands. And therefore, we say the tilt of the natsad L'tzorech davar hamutter is permitted on Shabbos. What does it mean by l'tzorech davar hamutter? Tiltu min hatzad, using an intermediary to move mukta on Shabbos, is not a blanket heter that you can move anytime you can move mukta like that, but rather it must be done in order for something which is permitted on Shabbos. Example given, you want a clean floor and you have mukta that is on the floor. You may take a broom and sweep it up and get rid of the dirt because you want a clean room. What is the purpose that you're doing it? So that your room should be clean. That is something that's permissible on Shabbos. And therefore, you can do the tiltum min hatzad. You can move the mukta through an intermediary in order to get it out the way. But if it's tiltum min hatzad, the purpose of moving the mukta is for something which is also, that means you have a mukta item that is outside on your porch and it's going to rain and rust. So if it's mukta, you cannot move it. And to take a broom and sweep it into a corner where it's not going to get wet would be considered a tiltu min hatzad. That is considered an indirect movement of mukta. But letzorech davar ha'asur, it is done for the purpose of an item which in itself is asur, meaning it's done for the mukta item, and therefore this heta of tiltu min hatzad does not apply. So you have to ask yourself, why are you doing it? If you're doing it for the mukta, then you may not do it. If you're doing it for the resultant clean room, then you may do it on Shabbos. Therefore, what we do is if you have bones and inedible shells and things like that on the table, so the way to remove them would be for the purpose of having a clean table, which is a mortificate purpose. There is, however, another heter, and that is called grasha rei, when the amount of dirt that is on the table is enough to make us feel uncomfortable. So then, that in itself is a heter called grasha rei. Grasha rei is referring to a bedchamber, a potty, and that is considered something uncomfortable to have in your vicinity when you are sleeping or eating. So if your person has a potty in his bedroom or in his living room, then on Shabbos, even though it is muktzeh, it may be removed because it's uncomfortable to have it here because of its filth. Therefore, we say from there we learn that anything which causes an uncomfortable situation as a result of the filth, the din of muktzeh gets we override the din of muktzeh. There is something to say is that not everybody can just say, well, for me to grash a ray, a person can be serious about understanding that how uncomfortable it is, can you really not stand it or whatever, and it doesn't really disturb or things like that. It's not just a blanket heter that anytime something is disgusting that we're going to say it's grash a ray, you have to understand that it's actually going to be a place that you're sitting or you're sleeping, and it's going to be a disturbance.
Yeah, okay. I have a question. If something generally doesn't bother you, but with company does it, there it does, like your sink has pieces of vegetables in it, and for yourself, you say, I'll pick it up later, but you have company, you want it to look neater. How do you hold with that?
For the sake of company, we differ consider something as a tzorei of Shabbos. In other words, when we talk about cleaning up something, you want to clean up a room, so if you're cleaning up the room, so that it's easy on Moshe Shabbos, that's the problem of a chon. If you're cleaning up the room for now, so then it's mutter. So that means you want the room to be neat. Now, if you, as you say, you don't care that it's a mess, but you're having company over, so that is enough to make it a Torah Shabbos that you may clean up the room for company, and therefore it's not considered a problem of a chon. What you're taking it one step further is, does company also make it into a situation of grasha rei? That means that not only is it, you want to override the issue of hachana, but also the issue of mukt. In the first case that it brought is when it's a question of hachana. For example, after Shalosh Shudas, one may not clear off the table because what for? Why do you need the roof? So it depends, obviously, when you finish Shalosh Shudas. It's the summer and Maariv is at 10 and you finish Shalosh Shudas at 6. So for the next 4 hours, you want the room to look decent, so you may clear off the Shalosh Shudas table and put a fresh tablecloth and make it look nice. That is anybody's sort of Shabbos. But if it's 5 minutes before Havdalah, one may not stop cleaning off the Shalosh Shudas table because who cares for those 5 minutes? And therefore, it would be a problem of Hachon. So we're discussing the Gabe Hachon, that someone who doesn't care about a certain mess and now is going to have company, that is enough to make it that it's considered sort of Shabbos. It's a need that I have now, and I don't have to, and it's not considered I'm bringing it for later. But the Gabe Graf Shalei, I'm not certain that company is enough of a reason. In other words, before I throw out an answer from my own swallow, let me give it some thought and I'll come back to it next week. Because I have started this and that. On the one hand, what is a grasha rei? It's something that is disgusting, and therefore it contradicts your owning Shabbos. And therefore, that's why we allow you to get rid of it. But something that doesn't usually bother you, but it only bothers you because someone else is coming. On the other hand, that's what Shabbos is to feel comfortable. And if you don't feel uncomfortable because of guests, I'm not here to say that it should be all right, but as I said, I'm going to look into it being there and come back to it. We're running out of time, so I just mentioned one more thing. What we're talking about, I mentioned bones. Are bones considered mukta or not? And it all depends on if there is something or someone that is prepared to eat those bones. If they can be eaten by you, by people, and people do eat them, so then obviously they're not mukta because someone's going to still suck them or eat them or chew on them, whatever, then that's human food. If that's not the situation, so now the question is whether it's animal food or not, and it's only mukta from the point of view of animal foods if animals are available. generally speaking, we say anything that a dog will eat is considered not muksa, because wherever you go, there are dogs. Which is interesting, because in some neighborhoods in Europe, there are no dogs at all, so that really becomes a question. But something that would be only edible for camels, so they're only in a place where there are camels, would you say it's not muksa? So then it's a very subjective halacha, depending on where you live and what animals are around. And therefore, we'll say that bones and those type of things, they are not muksa only if they are usable for available animals that are. If those animals are not in the vicinity, then they remain muksa. Okay, we'll hold the breath for this week. Thank you.
Thank you.